health industry groups are expected to deliver specific plans to the White House today.
If you like the plan you have, you can keep it.
To take over the health care system, either directly or indirectly, for the government to control it.
A lot of my friends, where they get their health care from is the emergency room. They're in the emergency room every week. They break a nail in the emergency room.
How are you going to avoid not having the ability to cost shift as you shrink that portion of privately funded health insurance?
All week long, we've been talking about health care reform. And health care reform is not simply a matter of spending federal dollars or changing insurance programs and reshuffling the paperwork that pays for the health care that all of us receive. It involves changing behavior of patients and doctors. Recently, lawmakers have been looking at Grand Junction, Colorado, as a model that improves the quality of care and cuts cost by changing the behavior of patients and doctors. The Dartmouth Atlas, a 20-plus year project that examines the wide variation in Medicare use and costs across the U.S., has ranked Grand Junction, Colorado, is one of the most efficient areas in the whole country. And joining us to talk about the Grand Junction model is one of the town's medical leaders, Dr. Michael Primenko. He's a family physician and serves on the Colorado Medical Society's Congress for Healthcare Reform. Doctor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's begin with one feature of Grand Junction, Colorado. I want to ask you about this. Is the efficiency in Grand Junction because most people or more people use primary care physicians rather than going directly to a specialist for their health care needs?
Yeah, I do believe that's a significant facet of why things operate well here is a focus on primary care. There's no question that's part of the equation.
How much of that behavioral change involved doctors coming together and patients being re-educated to change their focus?
Well, it's been a process ongoing now for about 30 years. This particular relationship has been going on for that amount of time, and that's probably how things kind of developed over time. And then, you know, we were fortunate to be highlighted because of some of these successes. So there wasn't this one point in time in the last 5 or 10 years where we all went out and said, hey, we got to change our behavior. This has been fostered through this relationship that we've had out here with a payer and with the local physicians and the medical community for about 30 years. And so it's developed over time.
All right. If I go out of my office here in Manhattan, in New York City, if I walk, north, south, east, or west, I run into a hospital. Some would say some of the best hospitals in the world are right here in New York. If I get sick in this city, I know what the narrative is going to be. How would it be different if I get sick in Grand Junction, Colorado? How different would my experience be?
Well, that's an excellent question. Let me first state that in the economics of healthcare, it doesn't quite work the way widgets work or gasoline. I sometimes tell people that, if you put four gas stations up on the corner, you'll drive the price down. If you put four hospitals on the corner, you're going to drive the cost up. Hospitals and physicians will stay busy. They'll find a way to do it. With the way healthcare works, there's always a way to do it. And so if you have an oversupply, whether it's perceived or real, more likely a real oversupply, you're going to have greater cost in medicine. And what Dartmouth Atlas has pointed out, as you increase cost and begin to overuse medicine, your quality begins to suffer because of the downside of treating people too much. There is a cost to that, and there's a quality concern with that.
All right. So I'm new to Grand Junction, Colorado, Dr. Primenko. Mm-hmm. I want that CAT scan. I really need that MRI. I want to feel better by getting those X-rays. Give me that prostate test. I really need to know that I'm okay.
Right.
How do you convince me that's actually the wrong path?
You're touching on an incredibly important point of healthcare reform and the part that patients own here. And doctors own a significant part, but you're touching on the importance of what the patients own. And that's where if you have a relationship with a physician, whether it's a primary care physician that you get to know over time or a physician that maybe a specialist that you know well. If you have a relationship with a physician that fosters better decision-making, a relationship of trust, then you can both sit down and you can say, hey, you know, here's what the studies show. If we just do this, treat you with some medicine, we're going to do pretty well. If you don't have that relationship and that trust isn't there, you're much more likely to want that extra procedure, and the doctor's much more likely to give it to you simply because, and that's what happens in the emergency room every day, is physicians, you know, oftentimes don't have the knowledge, underlying knowledge of a patient from 5-10 years earlier,
right.
And they do have to do all those studies. So I think the difference between, you know, in a big city versus here is oftentimes that relationship and rapport that's built up with a physician over time. Of course that happens in the big city, but in a culture of medicine where there's this, where you do develop a really good relationship with a primary care physician, you can make better decisions as you try to find your way through the forest of healthcare.
Right.
There's so many decisions that can be made.
Well, some of this is going to involve patients paying higher costs up front, but less over time, and we don't have time to really get into that. But I heard a great story last night on NPR, the program All Things Considered, which profiled a community that's wealthy, that is pretty hip to healthcare, but when they put together a voluntary program that was very low cost for people to have precisely the relationships you're talking about, only 6% of the people signed up. It's hard to get people mobilized to change their behavior. Do you believe mandates are going to be the only answer here?
I think it's part of the answer, and one of the reasons why I'm sitting here talking to you is the message needs to be sent out to folks across the nation that if we're going to save this system, because as you pointed out in the lead-up and introduction to this program, cost is the key. If you're a fan of universal health care, you're a fan of cost control. If you're a fan of even things staying the same and being able to do exactly what we're doing now, you're a fan of cost control. The only people that aren't fans of cost control are people that don't believe in the safety net and want to see the system fail. So if you want cost control, you, the patient, along with me, the doctor, are going to have to change our behaviors and what we expect and how we deliver and receive our health care.
All right, Dr. Michael Promenko, a great manifesto there for change in behavior as a prelude to reforming the healthcare system. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Michael Promenko is a family physician and serves on the Colorado Medical Society's Congress for Healthcare Reform in Grand Junction, Colorado, where they definitely have changed their behavior and have realized the cost savings.
Well, you've got to listen to us this morning, but now we need a little bit of your help and your attention. We would like to preserve some endangered sounds in a project with our partner, the BBC. And we want some of your suggestions. Go to our webpage, thetakeaway.org. You'll find out all the instructions on how to send us the sound that you would like to see preserved. The BBC will upload your sound to their World Sound Map, and we'll play some of your selections next week on the show. So what should be in our museum of the stuff we left behind?
Max calling from Florence, Alabama. One thing we're going to miss is the sound of change in cash drawers after all the inflation from this money being released into this economy. No more coins.
Oh, that's great.
877-8, my take on my take at thetakeaway.org.
There's lots going on our website. This morning we're keeping an eye on the political unrest in Iran. We're also looking at a movie about buttermilk. It's all there at thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Femi OK. And this is The Takeaway.
You got it.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.